We are indeed thankful because it is by God's grace that we are alive today. It is by God's grace that we have been able to safely arrive to gather together to worship Him. And so we just want to thank God, first of all, for that. And we also want to thank God for what He's going to do in our upcoming week. We don't know how He's going to do it, but we know that God is going to do something for us in this coming week. So we just want to thank Him for that as well. I also want to thank you all for being a part of this service this morning. And thank you for the your energetic participation in this service so far. Sometimes I don't like song leaders like Richard because I know I can't sing, but they sing with such energy you want to sing with them. And so then I was scared that they was going to turn on the mic and they was going to break it on the bust your eardrum from all my bad singing. But it's Richard's fault. He had a couple of y'all doing the church dance again. If you would, turn with me to the book of Proverbs, and the chapter is 11. The chapter is 11, and the verse is 29, and that's where we will launch our message for this morning. Again, that's Proverbs chapter 11, verse 29. The Bible reads, "He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart." We like to live for a subject this morning. Everybody in the house needs to be working. I got this phrase. I was talking to a brother a couple years ago, and we were talking about handling household chores and how the chores were distributed amongst his house. And he just looked at me and he said, "Everybody in the house got to be working in order for this to happen." So everybody in the house needs to be working. Now, what do we want to do this morning? I want us to fulfill our roles given by God in the home and in the church. I want us to fulfill our roles given by God in the home and in the church. How are we going to do that? I want to first let us know the structure of the family. I want us to understand what God's structure of the family is. Then we're going to look at the roles within that family, within God's structure. And then we want to look at the family and the church. So again, we want to look at the structure of the family, the roles in the family and the church. When we look at the structure of the family, we go to the book of Genesis. Go to the book of Genesis, and Genesis is because this is where everything begins. This is where it starts. This is where God establishes what a family is. And you see in Genesis chapter 2, starting at verse 20 through verses 25, that God has made everything on the earth. And He has made the man Adam. And after Adam names all of the animals of the earth, he sees that there's no helper for Adam. He sees that there's nothing equal to Adam. So he says, "Adam, I'm going to get you some help." And he makes him Eve. He puts him into a deep sleep. One of my teachers, Bible teachers, used to say he did the first surgery. He was the first anesthesiologist and the first one to take a body part out of somebody else. And then he sewed him back up. And he took that rib and he made woman. Now, I like the New Living Translation's version because it says that Adam exclaimed. That means he was excited when he saw Eve. Now, brother, when you see your wife or the woman that became your wife, you had to have gotten excited. No, okay, so nobody want to tell the truth. Okay, well, I was excited. And he says, "This is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. You shall be called woman because you were taken out of man." And then he says, "For this reason, man shall leave his mother and father and cling or stay with his wife." God performed the first marriage. So the structure of the family starts with a husband and a wife. That's important. That's important because In today's society, sometimes we believe that making kids is a family. But God's structure starts with a husband and a wife. And in chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, the Bible says that Adam knew his wife Eve, meaning that he had sexual relations with his wife, and she conceived. And she bare him a son, Cain, and then he knew her again. And she bare him a son, Abel. Now, just as a side note, I want to encourage us not to know everybody. Some of us know too many people. You don't need to get to know everybody. If you want to know them, marry them. And then you have what God adds to the family, and that is children. So the family starts with a husband and a wife. And then that husband and wife produce children. Now, what are the roles? What are the roles? We're going to go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And we're going to start at verse 22. But when we get into that, the first role, and this is the order in which Paul wrote it. So, sisters, don't look at me and say, you just want to pick on the women first. No, this is the order in which Paul wrote it. Before we go into this, I want to first lay the context of this passage and going into chapter 6, Ephesians chapter 6. When Paul writes this letter, I want us to understand Paul is writing to new converts. Now, I don't know how far down the road you are in your Christian walk, but at some point, you and I were new converts. And we had established some habits and behaviors that we now have to change. Those behaviors and habits did not change overnight. I would guess, and I would feel very confident in saying, after you came out of the water of baptism, you sinned again. And you may have done the sin that you repented of before you got baptized. So Paul is writing to people who are learning the way of Christ. And we need to remember that when we are talking with teaching younger people, people that are on a different walk with us or have not gone down the road as far as us, and we're expecting them to be where we are now. Remember, you were where they were at some point. You had to keep walking. You had to keep learning. You had to keep growing. You had to keep struggling. You had to keep failing, but you had to keep getting up in order to get where you are today. Don't forget that. So he's writing to a people in which wives and children to a man were property. You were just like a donkey if you were a child. If you were a wife, you were just like a herd of cattle. You didn't have any value in the home. So Paul is trying to give them Christ's way of having this family. See, a man at that time could sell his children into slavery. He could divorce his wife. He could abuse her. He could say anything he wanted to her, just like he was kicking his car because he was mad at it, because it wouldn't start. So he's writing to people who are changing their life, changing their lifestyle, changing their approach. And so when we read these passages, we have to remember that's what's going on at this time. And he starts off in verse 22. He says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church and the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything." The word submit here means to arrange yourself under. So you are putting... The wife is putting herself, her will, her way of doing things under her husband's. She's arranging herself under her husband. Now, when we look at this word submit, I want you to look at these 3 points. Submitting is a decision. A husband can't make his wife submit. She chooses to submit. And in her submission, she is following the command of God. when you submit to somebody, you have to trust them. You have to believe that they have your best interest at heart, and everything that they do and every move that they make is for your best interest. You have to trust them in order to put your will up under theirs. If you're not married, before you go down the aisle, you better make sure you trust him, because you have to arrange yourself under his will, his way of doing things. You have to work under the way he does things. And if you can't work, if you don't trust the way he do stuff, you don't need to marry him. Now, if you married and now you having some trust issues about the way he doing things, that's why we got part three here. Pray for him. You got to pray. Your husband is a man. I don't know if anything has changed, but what I know is men make mistakes. So that means your husband needs your prayers. That he have the wisdom he needs to guide the family. He needs your constant prayers. Your consistent prayers for his leadership. That he follow God. Trust that. Pray for him to stay with God. And if he stays with God, you can trust him. But submission, let me give you an example. There was a big decision that Ryan and I had to make for our family. And we had gone back and forth and we had had some arguments, some good arguments over it. And let me tell you what we got to. Nowhere. We got to nothing. I was on my heel, she was on her heel, and we was ready to go down and battle in the valley again. Now I had to change my approach. I said, I'm going to lay my thought out. And I had it laid out so well in my mind, it was smooth. And she was going to buy right into it. And she was going to go along with it. And I came down on my heel to the valley, David and Goliath. I wasn't Goliath. That don't mean Goliath lost in this situation. I'm just saying I wasn't Goliath. I was scared. So I went down there. And I had my little stones. That was my points. And Ryan had a sword. So I went down there with my points. And I was like, this going to work. It didn't work. It was a beautiful presentation. Had stuff sliding in on the slides and everything. It was beautiful. Music in the background didn't work. She gave her presentation. I listened to it. And it didn't work on me either. So we went back up on our heels. And then we came back down to battle again. But this time something different happened. Instead of saying, well, just do what you want to do then. She didn't say that. She said, I'm trusting you to make this decision. That's different. See, it ain't real submission when you say, whatever, you the man anyway. You're going to do what you want to do. That ain't submission. You don't trust them. But I took into consideration, I repeated back to her what she said. This is what I understand about what you're saying. Everything they put in those books, I said it. It still didn't work all the way. But I got her to the point to say, I'm going to trust you on this one. And we went into the office and made the decision. When we walked out, after the decision was made, she wasn't happy still. And sometimes submission, when you submit, you're not always going to be happy with the decision that the one over you has to make. And she walked behind me. She didn't talk to me. Eventually, she has talked to me again. But she didn't talk to me for a while, and I just had to accept that and understand that she was trusting me, but she was processing because she wasn't in agreement. But that's submission. And I hope she's still praying for me. But I think she took into, you know, I changed my approach, had my better PowerPoint. And I think she, not necessarily she agreed, but she more understood where I was coming from. And I think that's what allowed her to trust me. Although she knew I wasn't going to make a decision that was in her favor. So, submission is a decision. It's trusting. It's praying. You got to pray. Now let's go to the next phrase. Verse 25. Because sometimes what happens is we stop here and then we say, well, he gets to do everything he want to do. No, we got to keep reading. We keep reading. Husbands, verse 25 and verse 28. He says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. We'll skip down to verse 28. He says, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. That word love there means to have a strong, passionate affection for someone. A strong, passionate affection for someone. You care about this person's well-being. You care about how they're doing. You care about their successes. You care about their goals. You care about their dreams. You care about what they want out of life. And you want to make those things happen for them when you love somebody. So brothers, when you those of us that are husbands, let me tell you something. Love is a decision. Because remember, he's writing to men who have seen their wives as property. And now you want me to love her? As I was preparing for this sermon, I was thinking about this. I looked at my TV. And I said, I really like my TV. But if somebody break in here and there's a chance that my wife could get hurt, take the TV. I'll help you load it up. Now, I don't know if you all watch this show, Ron and I watch called This Is Us. Y'all seen that before? On one of the episodes, Randall came home from a trip. And he goes upstairs, he kisses his wife, checks on his daughters. He comes downstairs and there's a robber in his house. He stands on the floor between the robber and the stairs. And he says, you want money? You can have the money. You can have anything in here you want, but don't go upstairs. It's going to be a problem. We're going to fight if you go upstairs. If you go upstairs where my wife is, it's going to be a problem. One person walking down, and it won't be him. That's what Randall was saying. Because he loves his wife. He made a decision. He protected her. He was going to protect her, even if it meant giving of all the things he had accumulated, even if it meant giving of his own life, he was going to save his family. Love is a decision. These men are having to make a decision that she is not property. She is a person. She is worthy. She is special. Love listens to the wife. Love listens. You know why you listen? Because you don't know everything. And if you knew everything, you wouldn't need a wife. God wouldn't have sent you no help. Keep that in mind. He didn't send any help for the woman. He sent help for the man. Love gives itself for his wife. A husband gives of himself. Ultimately, he may give his life. But he gives his time. He gets up and he goes to work. He's giving of himself. When his co-workers treat him bad, he's giving of himself. He takes it for his wife. When his boss don't treat him right, he takes it for his wife. When he don't want to be in traffic, he takes it for his wife. He gives of himself for his wife. He shares with his wife. Love shares. Share your thoughts. Share your plans. Don't just walk in and say, we doing this. Say, sweetheart, get that presentation together, sweetheart. Maybe cook dinner yourself. Cook her something. And then say, look, I'm thinking about this. I think we ought to go this way. I think the kids ought to do this. And you better have your points laid out because your wife's smart. She probably been seeing you thinking about this. I don't know how your wife sees you thinking. But she's like, yeah, I've been waiting on this conversation. But you share with your wife your goals, your dreams. When she tells you what, when you listen to her, you're listening not so she can be done talking. You're listening because you want to see how can you help her? How can you give to her? And then last, you pray for your wife. Love prays for the wife. Love prays for that trust. Love prays that each day that as a husband, I'm doing what is necessary for my wife to trust me and for my wife to keep making the decision to put her desires under mine. You got to pray for yourself too. Because God has called you to be the head. So with God calling you to be the head, you are the responsible party. Remember when they ate the fruit, who ate first? Eve. But who did God come looking for first? Adam. Now, no sister said Eve when I asked the first question. Everybody said Adam. Okay. But he has a responsibility. Solomon taught us a great lesson about how to be a leader. He said, God said, you can ask me for anything you want. And he asked God for wisdom, that he may know how to go in and out of the people. Husbands, pray for wisdom, that you know how to go in and out with your family. How you know how to discern what's right and wrong for your family. Now we have a wife and we have the husband. Now they have children. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Children, I'm still a children too. Listen and follow your parents' commands. Obey them. Don't just respect them. The word honor means have a deep respect. Hold your parents high in high honor. Hold them in high regard because of what they've done for you, because of what they do for you all the time. I still keep my parents up there because my mama always is there for me. As old as I is, my mama's still there. If I call and say, Mama, I just want to talk. She say, go ahead, I'm listening. Then she usually fall asleep. Then she wake up and tell me all the stuff I need to do. She say, you done? Okay, you ready to listen? Now do this. Hold them in great honor. Because your parents sacrifice so much to provide for you, or have provided for you a great life. I remember Tom saying before, his parents provided such a good life, he didn't realize he was poor until he got around some rich people. That's good living. That's good work. I thought butter and jelly sandwiches were the norm until I found people eating peanut butter. I said, y'all don't eat just butter with it? They said, what happened? You don't re-ran out of peanut butter? That's what my grandmama made me. I thought that's why everybody ate it. Some sister looking at me like, no, that's not it. You were struggling. Your parents are special. Parents are special. Listen to them. A Christian parent is not going to tell a child anything that's going to take them away from God or being successful. Let's go down to verse 4. Go down to verse 4. And then before we go there, verse 3 says, that it has a promise. In verse 2 it says that it may be well with thee, that you may prosper and thou mayest live long on the earth. Your life expectancy grows from obedience, because those teaching you aren't teaching you how to get yourself killed. And if you don't obey them, they may take you out. So obedience keeps you alive. Let's go to verse 4. And fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That word fathers has nothing to do with mama. Remember the context. The husband had the sole authority in the house, and everybody was his property. So now he has to love his wife, and now he has to change the relationship he has with his children. They aren't his little minions. They aren't his little slaves anymore. They are people that he is bringing up, that he is raising up to go a certain way, to follow God. They are people that he is raising up to be productive citizens in society. His job has changed. He says, provoke not them to wrath. When you treat them like they're nothing, when you treat someone like they're nothing and you're supposed to be the one showing them love and care for them, guess what? They will get angry. They out there in the field picking whatever daddy told them to pick, and then you say, I'm getting rid of you. You're going to be mad. You will be upset. I'll tell you another way that we do it. We don't put our children in slavery anymore. But fathers, this is what we do that angers our children. We leave. When you're not there, child gets angry. They're mad at any man they meet because their dad deserted them. And they feel like the next man is going to desert them too. It makes them angry. And they have to carry that anger. God says, don't provoke your children to wrath. Don't make your children angry. But here's what you do. You bring them up. You train them. That word nurture means you train them. Admonition means you counsel them. You warn them. You guide them. You advise them in the Lord. Your training comes from God. How you train them is how God wants them to go. How you counsel them is to get them away from the things that's going to take them away from God's word and God's way. Now, that may make them upset, but they won't be angry. They may not like you because of the training. Because training ain't always, training hard. Ask any athlete, training's hard. And I've trained some athletes, a couple of them. They never quit the team. They didn't like me that day after practice. But nobody ever said, I don't want my jersey. They all came and got their jersey on game day. So they'll be there. When I tell Caleb, don't throw the ball over there no more. You're going to throw another interception. He don't like it when I tell him that because he knew he threw an interception. But guess what? He go back out there and throw the ball. As long as I don't tell him he can't throw no more, he's fine. Now let's look at the next relationship. Siblings. Because when you have children, they're siblings to each other. This comes in verse, when you look at verse 18, Paul writes, and be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart, giving thanks always. And then going down to verse 21, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Verse 21 happens when we are filled with the Spirit. When we're filled with the Spirit, we speak to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. We give thanks and we submit ourselves to each other. There is a mutual arrangement. It's almost like we limboing. Because I'm trying to get lower than you. You submit to me, I'm submitting to you. You submit to me, I'm submitting to you. Because what we're doing is we recognize and respect one another's strength. And we yield to their expertise. Once again, we don't know everything. Now, I have a small family. I only got two. But they two totally different people. They have different strengths and weaknesses. I'll give you a little fun one. Caleb loves to play basketball, but he likes to shoot. Jason loves to play basketball. She likes to play defense. Well, that's two strengths going at each other. So I said, Caleb, whenever you beat Jason, you are now good. Because she really good at defense. So it's really tough for you to shoot. And you like shooting. He just be out there dribbling and dribbling and dribbling. And when he decided to shoot, one time he got close to beating her. He got close to beating her, then he started running his mouth. And Jay said, okay. Not another shot, touch air. But there's a respect for one another. He may say, Jason, how you defending me so well? Jason may say, Caleb, how do you do that move you did that almost worked? That's a good move. Can you tell? But they're yielding to one another's expertise. They're submitting to each other. They're submitting to each other, and that's what we have to do. You and your siblings have to submit to one another. Arrange your will, arrange your skill set under somebody that has a better skill set and learn from them. Now let's look at the family structure and the church. In verse 32 of chapter 5, the Bible says this. Paul writes, "This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church." This illustration that Paul presented and taught was not only for the family, but it was also to show the relationship between Christ and his church. Christ is the husband. He's the head. And the husband loves. He gave himself for his church. He not only gave of himself when he came down to earth, but he ultimately gave of himself when he went up on the cross. The church is his wife. And as members of the church, we must submit and put our will, put our way of doing things under his. But also as members of the church, we are, according to Ephesians chapter 1, verse 5, one of those spiritual blessings is the adoption of children. So we are also his children. And what are children supposed to do in this relationship? Obey and honor. We ought to love, we ought to just hold in high regard Christ for sacrificing himself so that we can have a relationship and be at peace with God. And whatever he says, because Christ is the husband and we are the children, we're going to do it. We will obey. And amongst each other, as brothers and sisters in the church, with siblings, we got to submit to one another's expertise. All brains, all knowledge that the church needs to function doesn't operate in one office. That's why everybody in the house needs to be working. Now remember the text. He that troubleth his house inherits nothing. You will receive, you profit nothing when you trouble your house. When a wife doesn't submit, she troubles the house. Because a husband can't be the head if somebody else trying to be the head. If a husband doesn't love his wife and lead his family, he troubles the house. Because the wife is trying to be, the wife is trying to put herself under you. She's trying to arrange herself under you, but you keep going lower than her. You don't want to lead. You're not loving her. So you're making it difficult. You're troubling the house, and you're going to profit nothing. Children, when we disobey our parents, we trouble the house. We trouble the house, and then we get sore behind. We troubling the house. You get nothing out of that. And when you don't work together with your siblings, trouble your house. Everybody in the house needs to be working, but we have to be working in our role. Can't work in nobody else's role. When you do somebody else's job, your job is not being done, and now we got trouble. Now the order is disturbed. Now let me say this to husbands and wives. Let us not belittle our spouses privately or publicly, because in a marriage you are one. So when you put them down, who else are you putting down? Yourself. I'm not saying you're gonna like everything they do. there's a difference between discussing what you don't like, the action you don't like, and putting them down as a person. When you put them down, when you belittle your spouse, you belittle yourself. And as a husband, you definitely can't belittle yourself, because you ought to love your wife as you love yourself. And as T.O. said it best, I love me some me. And if you wouldn't let yourself go hungry, you're not going to let your spouse go hungry. And I ain't letting myself go hungry. At all. At all. It's very important that we fulfill our role. Do your job. In your home, in your family, and in the church. Do your job. If we don't submit in the church to one another, to those that God has put in authority over us, that submission is a decision. That submission, you got to pray. Pray for your leaders. Always. And trust them. Trust God. Pray for them and trust God that he's going to guide them. But we have to do our part. And all, God doesn't need you to try to do two parts. Just do yours. Just do your role. As a husband, as a wife, as a child, as a sibling, do your role. And the house will work just fine. Because everybody in the house needs to be working. This morning, we ask you this morning, are you fulfilling your role in the house? Are you fulfilling your role in your house? Are you leading? Are you loving husbands? Are you submitting wives? Are you obeying children? Are you submitting siblings? Are you doing your role? If not, God says to us in 1 John 1:9 that if we confess our faults, he is just and faithful to forgive us. Because when we don't do our role, we trouble the house. And if you want to receive something, I want to receive heaven, you don't want to trouble the house. Because God don't want no trouble in heaven. He don't want anybody that's going to disturb peace in heaven. You can't go. It's going to be peaceful. We're going to be singing songs of praise. Got time for no mess. Or maybe you're saying, I want to be a child of God. I want to obey Christ. The first thing you have to do to be a child of God is to be saved. And when you get saved, you get put into the family. And you get to fulfill your role as not only the bride of Christ, but you get to be a child of God. And you also get to be brothers and sisters with all the wonderful people in here. And you get to grow, continue to grow, and learn more about what Christ would have you do. Now, how do I get saved? I want that saved thing so I can be in that family. How do I get that saved thing? It's very simple. Mark chapter 16, verses 15 and 16, Jesus says, and he said unto them, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. That's it. It's not a long, drawn-out class. It's nothing in depth you have to do. You don't have to fill out a questionnaire or anything. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned. If you make that choice to be saved, you say, I believe and I want to be baptized, you'll come forward and we'll ask you one question. I'm going to tell you the whole test right now. Y'all ready? Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? The answer is yes. If you believe that, if that's your answer, we'll baptize you today. Again, no question now. No class you have to take. You just got to change clothes. And not be mad about getting your hair wet. That shower cap may fall off. I just want to be honest with people this morning. You'll come out with wet hair, but covered in Jesus. Jesus will dry it out. Jesus will provide the money to get it fixed again. Because you're one of his children. Because he loves you. He takes care of his bride. So if there's anyone that's subject to the invitation, whether you need prayers for forgiveness or you want to be saved, let it be known as together we stand and sing the song of invitation.